I'm Claire Minahan. You're listening to Montana Public Radio. I'm speaking on the phone today with Gregory Alan Isakov. He's a singer-songwriter. Greg, you have three albums thus far. How do you build a set list from them? Is it like according to the venue? Do you pull from one album more than another?
A lot of times I'll just kind of feel out the room first, and then it sort of happens kind of organically every day.
Mm-hmm. Are there any new projects or albums that you're working on currently? Because your last one was released in 2013, The Weatherman, correct?
Yeah, we've been working on a live record, actually, that we did with the Colorado Symphony back home.
Oh, fantastic.
And so that's probably due for release over the winter. Mm-hmm. And then I'm making another studio record right now as well.
Mm-hmm. And are you collaborating with Brandi Carlile again, or are you working with new people?
Yeah, Brandi and I have, we have a couple tracks that we've been kind of saving for like an EP. I'm not sure when those will be coming out.
Okay. You mentioned, I know that you grew up in South Africa and that you now live in Colorado. Can you kind of speak a bit to, you know, whether or not you're moving around influenced your songwriting or, you know?
Sure. You know, I'm sure it did. I find that I write a lot about just sort of sense of place, makes mm-hmm. it into the writing. And I used to travel, a lot by myself. And so I would write a lot when I did that. This is actually the first solo tour I've done in mm-hmm. Many years. Mm-hmm. I normally tour with a band. And that can be really helpful in writing and kind of sort of just being a sort of fly on the wall in the situation, but I mostly write. I mostly take time off of touring and write, which I have been kind of since May.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have a brother that collaborates with you when you write songs. Can you kind of speak to what's that like?
Oh, it's great. We've written three or four songs together, and a lot of times my brother will just be. He lives on the East Coast, but he'll just mm-hmm. come out. I live on a farm outside of Boulder. He'll just stay for, the summer or whenever he can, and we'll just mm-hmm. hang out and nerd out about songs, play a lot of stuff.
so you mentioned that you work now in a farm in Colorado. Because speaking to a person who grew up in Montana, where there's an incredibly strong sense of place that really becomes a part of like who we identify, I think, as Montanans. Can you kind of speak to how these two lifestyles, the musician and the farmer, kind of how those work cohesively?
I mean, it's really just been, I think the last couple of years, I've really tried to dial it in to the, mm-hmm. I kind of just had my touring season kind of coincide with the winter, and then I'm kind of off by like last frost. So I've been kind of winning that way the last 2 years. But we do a lot of festivals as well, so I'm not there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been working out so far. Mm-hmm. And I was a horticulture major in school, so I just I've always had this kind of love affair with growing food and mm-hmm. plants and. So
do you have animals as well, or is it just food?
Yeah, we have like bees and chickens and sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, there's also like, there's like nine of us that live out there, so it's okay. been pretty manageable.
Okay.
Three members of our band and then a bunch of other people.
Oh, nice. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Because you were working on a degree in horticulture, was music ever an intended career for you, or did it just kind of happen
Never.
Upon you?
Okay. I still feel like, 15 years old about it. Like, I can't believe I get to do this for money. It's the mm-hmm. weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really, it really helped me in this way, kind of not try to hold the reins on it too much. Just because I always really thought I was just going to be farming I had a landscaping company as well, and I worked mm-hmm. on a bunch of small farms.
Sure.
And I think I still have one client left. About 3 years ago, I let go of of our little small business. And
sure.
I've been touring mostly since then.
This is kind of a personal question, but your songs they really get, I think, at the human experience. They're really like deeply intrinsic. I think they're incredibly relatable to anybody who listens to them. Are you writing these from like very specific encounters with people, or about places, or specific people, or is it more just like people you know, or?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Writing is sort of this elusive thing. I've never really been able to pinpoint exactly where a song will, you know, maybe I'll be able to pinpoint the seed of like where it kind of started.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain town, or, like I have this one song called San Francisco, and mm-hmm. I was going to move out there, and I ended up moving back east to help my dad, and I sort of just like lived in my parents' basement for a winter and got this roofing job. And
great.
then I wrote this song, you know, in Pennsylvania. So it really kind of started with this idea of a town, and then all these other places kind of make it into it.
Mm-hmm.
Misfits, quiet room, San Francisco. Hell is all talking round. Is it now sunny California?
Do you ever find that you write songs and then you're playing them and then you kind of make a discovery as you're playing them, like, oh, like, that's what this song is about?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time. Yeah.
Are those your favorites? Are those your
I
best
love those,
ones?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I feel like that most of the time, I think.
That's such I think that that's like what every musician aspires to. I think at the end of the well, or maybe not.
You know, I never really understood how it worked. I really look up to people that have these, like Springsteen has this like amazing ability to write these elaborate stories, and
mm-hmm.
you know, like that record goes to Tom Joad. I put it on, and I'm instantly like in the Southwest,
yeah.
like, you know, like living in a car or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just some people that are just so brilliant at telling a story in that
yeah.
way, and I sort of just use little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just the way it just naturally happens, you know.
When you write music, are you writing it like with the idea of somebody who's going to put it, like in their, you know, they're going to listen to it on their car when they're alone and they're driving a long stretch of highway, or do you write it more for people who like, is it intended to be seen live or experienced live? Because recorded.
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I do. Our live show is a lot kind of heavier. It's a little bit more electric.
Sure.
And maybe a bit darker and bigger. And I think it is such a different experience playing music to like this like group consciousness at the same time. And then,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I make records to one person. You know, in a car probably in
mm-hmm.
86 band again.
Mm-hmm.
With the same speakers that I have, so hopefully they're hearing the same thing that I am. But I think about that a lot. I think about you're sort of just telling a secret to one person, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit? Do you have any like just like really good memorable onstage moments or like great interactions with like people or places as you've been traveling? Because you've traveled a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy. My friend was just asking me how many shows I play a year, and I think mm-hmm. it's just down to, I think I'm this year we did like 100 and a little bit, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
Which is not that many in the life of a touring band. You know, I think a lot of them do 200, and which is just, I think I tried that once and my life kind of fell apart. You know? But I was just remembering today that I drove from Colorado to Ohio to open up for Ani DiFranco. I did a couple tours with her. It was like the first show of the tour, and I kind of drove a couple days straight. You know, we didn't have time to stop, mm-hmm. so we just sort of switched off, and no one slept. And we're on stage, and the opening, you know, doing the opening run is amazing. It's such a different kind of craft in its own. You know, opening. I think it's sort of my little brother and I have been writing a dark comedy called The Opener. Just because it's amazing that we still do that, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's such like an old tradition, but yeah, we were opening and we played, you know, I think they were running a little bit late or something, so they cut our set a little bit short, and so they kind of yell at you from the side of the monitor, at the side of the stage, kind of yell at you like, one more song or five more minutes, you know, or whatever. And I was
just like totally throws off the mood of it.
Well, no, it was. I was like, all right, I want to be on time here, you know. And I was like, all right, cool. And I thought I had said like, we're just gonna leave you with one more, but I don't know. I was pretty tired and delirious. And then we finished the song, and I waved goodbye and walked off stage. And the band just had no idea that we were done. They were like, yeah, like three more songs left, and so they just. Like all sat there, and I'm gone, and Ani's just looking at us like, "What is this guy doing, man?" Like, it was amazing, you know. It was one of those like really weird, awkward, amazing moments.
Mm-hmm. That's really funny. Do you get, you know, when you're flying, do you get recognized by people?
Not really. Yeah, not really so much. A lot of like, we find ourselves in airports a lot with instruments. So we get a lot of like, what's the name of your band? And I'm always like, oh dear Lord, I have to say this long, gigantic name again. Whoops. That's more of the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, things could be worse.
Yeah, definitely worse. Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be in Montana. It's been a long time.
Yeah, when was the last time that you... Because you used to play... I read an interview of yours, and you'd mentioned, you know, that you kind of used to... You know, before you were like Gregory Alan Isakov, you were playing to kind of like sleepy bar crowds in like Bozeman and Missoula. So when was that?
That was probably 8 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe 7 or 8 years ago, yeah. And I used to just come up here and go camping.
Oh, nice. Where at?
And then... actually, outside of Bozeman and then Missoula, it was the first time I'd ever seen a grizzly bear. So I guess I started kind of touring and playing just so I could kind of like go camping for free, you know. So I would do that in Montana mostly, and it's just really bringing me back being up here.
Yeah, it's a good spot to do it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Did you grow up playing guitar, or did you learn other instruments, or how did you start there?
Well, guitar was sort of this escape for me. I was in jazz band. I played like saxophone and drums. And I hated it. I hated it because we had to do like marching band, you know, and wear these like crazy. And I hated football and like we had, like go to all the games.
You and me both.
It was like this awful experience. And I loved jazz. And, you know, and I started learning about jazz and stuff, and I was totally down with that. But it's sort of I had this taint of this feeling about music that I just that wasn't coming from this creative place. It was kind of coming from this anxious place.
Yeah.
And my brother had this like kind of crappy electric guitar. And I would just kind of come home from school and just sort of bang around on that every day. And I thought to myself, you know, I never want to get a lesson. I never want to have like any form to this or a teacher in my brain. Yeah, that was mainly it, you know. And then when I went to college, there was an option for me to do some music stuff there, and I was like, nope, go into the horticulture department, play songs in my kitchen.
That's great. Can you? Two of my favorite songs by you are "Dandelion Wine" and "If I Go, I'm Going."
Oh, cool.
Can you kind of tell the story about how those songs came into fruition, or if you want to talk about other songs?
Yeah, sure. "Dandelion Wine." I wrote that. That was probably, you know, some songs come easy, some take a long time, and that one in particular I don't think I've ever worked longer on any piece of music.
Wow. It's such a short song.
Yeah, it's really short.
Like, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I think it's like under 2 minutes. I remember hearing a song by Paul Simon, and I hadn't really heard much of his like solo stuff at the time. And I think it was a song called Papa Hobo. Do you know that song?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't.
Detroit, got a hell of a hockey team. It's a killer song. And got a left-handed way of making a man sign up on that automotive dream. Hmm. But I don't know. He has this way of saying a lot with very few words.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really interested in that when I was working on that on Dandelion Wine. And I think I had, you know, summer days were just a magazine, cutting grass for gasoline so I could see you soon. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. That was the only thing that happened for months. And then the guitar would like get thrown on the bed, and then I would try it again, and nothing else happened.
Mm-hmm.
For months, and I think I worked on it every day, or I tried for it every day, you know?
Because mm-hmm.
You don't really want to work it too much. You don't want to force it. You sort of,
yeah.
You know, that we have the seed, and it's going to finish itself, and I know it will. I just have to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it wasn't until like a few 4 or 5 months later that the rest of the song came.
And what was the catalyst for that? Like, how did it become, like, how did it finish? Were you just performing it, and then you just kind of like... weren't inspired with words, or
no? I don't think there was anything like that. It was, I think it was just one kind of normal evening, and I picked it up and I tried again, and mm-hmm. and the rest of the song came, and it was a great learning experience for me because I thought that like if a song didn't live for maybe you know a week, it's trash, it's gone, mm-hmm. you know, because I think most of what I create will end up in the parts yard, you know, and I, you know, we only show, you know, and I think this goes for anyone, you know, we only show this shined up version of our work, you
yeah.
know, this kind of refined version,
mm-hmm.
but you know, and I really look up to like Leonard Cohen or something. I think he's a genius, you know, and, but then I think to myself like, man, I bet his trash can's crazy, you know, like I bet he throws away a ton also, you know, and I think that's really, I would bet that's true, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a cool learning experience for me because I realized, like, you know, if you do just wait, if you're patient and you don't try to just rush it for the sake of finishing, you know, a recording or this and that, then I think you'll get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Summer days are just a magazine. A magazine, a magazine. Cutting grass for gasoline, so I can see it soon.
Well, thank you again so much for speaking
yeah,
with us
thank
today,
you.
Greg. Really, really
thanks,
appreciate
Claire.
It. Yeah. You're welcome.
It's carbon and monoxide, the old Detroit perfume. It hangs on the highways in the morning and it lays you down by noon. Oh, Papa Hobo, you can see that I'm dressed like a schoolboy, but I feel like a clown. It's a natural reaction I learned.